This is Audible Kids.
Audible Incorporated and SparkNotes present The SparkNotes Study Guide for To Kill a Mockingbird by Harper Lee. Read by Ian August.
To Kill a Mockingbird by Harper Lee. A girl confronts evil as her father unsuccessfully defends an innocent black man accused of raping a white woman. The Life of Harper Lee. Nell Harper Lee was born on April 28, 1926, in Monroeville, Alabama. Her father was a lawyer, as is her character Atticus in To Kill a Mockingbird, and Truman Capote was one of her childhood friends. Capote later earned fame as a writer, and Lee used him as the model for her character Dill in To Kill a Mockingbird. Lee earned her bachelor's degree from the University of Alabama, and then enrolled in the University of Alabama Law School, although she left the program a few months short of graduation. In 1950, Lee moved to New York City, where she worked at an airline. In 1960, she published To Kill a Mockingbird. Despite the mixed critical response the novel received, it became an enormous popular success, winning the Pulitzer Prize in 1961 and selling over 15 million copies. 2 years after the novel's publication, an Academy Award-winning film version of the novel, starring Gregory Peck as Atticus Finch, was produced. Lee retreated from the public eye, avoiding interviews, declining to write the screenplay for the film version, and publishing only a few short magazine articles after 1961. Lee eventually returned to Monroeville, where she lives today. To Kill a Mockingbird in context. Despite the many similarities between To Kill a Mockingbird and Lee's personal life, Lee maintains that the novel portrays a non-specific southern town, not her own childhood town. "People are people anywhere you put them," she declared in a 1961 interview. Yet the book's setting and characters are not the only aspects of the story shaped by events that occurred during Lee's childhood. In 1931, when Lee was 5, 9 young black men were accused of raping 2 white women near Scottsboro, Alabama. After a series of lengthy, highly publicized, and often bitter trials, 5 of the 9 men were sentenced to long prison terms. Many prominent lawyers and other American citizens believed that the sentences were motivated by racial prejudice. Many people suspected that the women were lying about the rapes. Over the course of numerous appeals, their claims seemed increasingly dubious. The Scottsboro case, as the trials of the 9 men came to be called, likely inspired the fictional trial that stands at the heart of Lee's novel. In 1993, Lee wrote a brief foreword to her book, asking that future editions of To Kill a Mockingbird be spared critical introductions. "Mockingbird," she writes, "still says what it has to say. It has managed to survive the years without preamble." The book remains a staple of high school and college reading lists. To Kill a Mockingbird. Key facts. Time and place written. 1950s, completed in 1957. New York City. Date of first publication, 1960. Publisher, J. B. Lippincott. Type of work, novel. Genre, courtroom drama, social protest novel, southern novel. Language, English. Tense, past. Tone, childlike, humorous, nostalgic, innocent, dark, foreboding. Setting, time, 1933 through 1935. Setting, place, the fictional town of Macomb, Alabama. Narrator, Scout Finch in the first person. Point of view, scouts. Protagonist, scout. Antagonist, Bob Ewell, scouts teachers, and racism. To Kill a Mockingbird, plot overview. Scout Finch lives with her brother, Jem, and their widowed father, Atticus, in the sleepy Alabama town of Macomb. The Great Depression has hit Macomb hard, but Atticus is a prominent lawyer, and the Finch family is reasonably well off. One summer, Jem and Scout befriend a boy named Dill, who has come to live in their neighborhood for the summer. Dill is fascinated with the spooky house on their street called the Radley Place. The house is owned by Mr. Nathan Radley, whose brother, Arthur, nicknamed Boo, lives there and never comes outside. Scout goes to school for the first time that fall and detests it. She and Jem find gifts apparently left for them in a knothole of a tree on the Radley property. Dill returns the following summer, and he, Scout, and Jem act out the story of Boo Radley. Atticus puts a stop to their antics, urging the children to try to see life from another person's perspective before making judgments. On Dill's last night in Maycomb, the three sneak onto the Radley property, where Nathan Radley shoots at them. Jem loses his pants as the children scramble to escape. When he returns for them, he finds them mended and hung over the fence. The next winter, Jem and Scout find more presents in the tree, presumably left by the mysterious Boo. Nathan Radley eventually plugs the knothole with cement. A fire breaks out in another neighbor's house, and as Scout watches the blaze, someone slips a blanket onto her shoulders. Convinced that Boo did it, Jem tells Atticus about the mended pants and the presents. To the consternation of Maycomb's racist white community, Atticus agrees to defend a black man named Tom Robinson, who has been accused of raping a white woman. Because of Atticus's decision, children abuse Jem and Scout. Calpurnia, the Finch's black cook, takes them to the local black church, where the warm and close-knit community embraces the children. Atticus's sister, Alexandra, comes to live with the Finches the next summer. Dill, who is supposed to live with his new father in another town, runs away and comes to Maycomb. Tom Robinson's trial begins. When Robinson is placed in the local jail, a mob gathers to lynch him. Atticus faces the mob down the night before the trial. Jem and Scout. Scout recognizes one of the men as the father of one of her classmates, and her polite inquiries after his son shames him into dispersing the mob. At the trial, Jem and Scout sit in the colored balcony with the town's black citizens. Atticus provides clear evidence that the accusers, Mayella Ewell and her father, Bob, are lying. The truth is that Mayella propositioned Tom Robinson, and when her father caught her, she accused Tom of rape to cover her shame and guilt. Atticus suggests that Mayella's face is marked because her father, not Tom, beat her. Despite the significant evidence pointing to Tom's innocence, the all-white jury convicts him. Tom later tries to escape from prison and is shot to death. Jem's faith in justice is badly shaken, and he lapses into despondency and doubt. Despite the verdict, Bob Ewell feels that Atticus and the judge made a fool of him, and he vows revenge. He menaces Tom Robinson's widow, tries to break into the judge's house, and finally attacks Jem and Scout as they walk home from a Halloween party. Boo Radley intervenes, saving the children and killing Ewell in the struggle. After carrying the wounded Jem home and sitting with Scout for a while, Boo disappears once more into the Radley house. Scout thinks she can finally imagine what life is like for Boo. She embraces her father's advice to practice sympathy and understanding. Characters in To Kill a Mockingbird. Aunt Alexandra, Atticus's sister. Alexandra is a strong-willed woman, fiercely devoted to her family, and committed to propriety and tradition. Miss Maudie Atkinson, the Finch's neighbor. Miss Maudie is a sharp-tongued widow, almost the same age as Atticus's younger brother, Jack. She shares Atticus's passion for justice and is the children's closest adult friend. Calpurnia, the Finch's black cook. Calpurnia, a stern disciplinarian, introduces Jem and Scout to her own black community. Mr. Walter Cunningham, a poor farmer. Cunningham, part of the mob that seeks to lynch Tom Robinson, backs down in the face of Scout's politeness. Walter Cunningham, Mr. Walter Cunningham's son. Walter is one of Scout's classmates. Link Dees, Tom Robinson's employer. Dees praises Tom in court. Mrs. Henry Lafayette DeBose, an elderly, ill-tempered, racist woman who lives near the Finches. Atticus admires Mrs. DeBose for the courage with which she battles her morphine addiction. Bob Ewell, a drunken, usually unemployed member of Maycomb's poorest family. Ewell wrongfully accuses Tom Robinson of raping his daughter. He is ignorant and hateful. Mayella Ewell, Bob Ewell's abused, lonely, unhappy daughter. Atticus Finch, Scout and Jem's father. Atticus, a widower lawyer with a dry sense of humor, has a strong sense of morality and justice. Jean Louise, Scout, Finch. The narrator and protagonist of the novel. Scout is intelligent, tomboyish, and combative. The events of the novel test her basic faith in the goodness of people. Jeremy Atticus, Jem, Finch. Scout's brother. 4 years older than Scout, Jem gradually separates himself from her games, but remains her close companion and protector. Charles Baker, Dill, Harris. Jem and Scout's summer neighbor and friend. Dill is a diminutive, confident boy with an active imagination. Arthur Boo Radley. Jem and Scout's reclusive neighbor. Boo was an intelligent child but emotionally damaged by his cruel father. He is one of the novel's mockingbirds, a good person injured by the evil of mankind. Nathan Radley. Boo Radley's older brother. Nathan seems similar to his and Boo's deceased father, cruel and impatient. Mr. Dolphu Raymond, a wealthy white man. Raymond pretends to be a drunk so that the people of Maycomb will be able to explain the fact that he lives with his black mistress and mulatto children. He dislikes white society's hypocrisy. Tom Robinson, a black field hand. Tom is a generous man who is accused of rape. Heck Tate, the sheriff of Maycomb. Heck, who is a major witness at Tom Robinson's trial, is a decent man who tries to protect the innocent. Mr. Underwood, the publisher of Maycomb's newspaper. Mr. Underwood respects Atticus. Themes in To Kill a Mockingbird. The ability to fend off cynicism. To Kill a Mockingbird explores the moral nature of human beings, asking whether people are essentially good or essentially evil. Lee approaches this question by dramatizing Scout and Jem's transition from childhood innocence, a time when they assume that people are good because they have never seen evil, to young adulthood, when they have seen evil and must incorporate it into their worldviews. Atticus Finch, the moral voice of the novel, has managed to experience and understand evil without losing his faith in the human capacity for goodness. He tries to teach his children that by understanding that most people are basically good, but struggle with evil tendencies, it is possible to live a moral life without losing hope or becoming cynical. For example, Atticus admires Mrs. DeBow's courage even while deploring her racism. Atticus's children have varying degrees of success in maintaining an optimistic outlook. Scout loses her innocence without becoming jaded. Jem becomes disillusioned. But the ability to avoid cynicism, the task that preoccupies the main characters, is an academic question for most. Atticus, Scout, and Jem are essentially detached observers of evil, but people like Tom Robinson and Boo Radley are real victims of evil. For them, the struggle to avoid disillusionment is totally irrelevant. Some people may be good, or some people may be partly good, but it doesn't really matter. Enough evil exists in humanity to destroy Tom and Boo. The moral education of children. Lee suggests that the moral education of children is at least as important as their academic education. She contrasts Atticus's patient, kind, moral education of his children with that provided by the teachers at Scout's school, who are either frustratingly unsympathetic or morally hypocritical. Atticus gets through to Scout and Jem by putting himself in their shoes, while teachers like Miss Caroline alienate their students by sticking rigidly to certain educational techniques, even those that are ineffectual. Lee concludes that learning sympathy and understanding from a sympathetic, understanding teacher is far more important than learning algebra from a tyrant. The irrationality of the class system. Lee suggests that social hierarchies such as Maycomb's are irrational. The relatively well-off Finches stand near the top of Maycomb's social hierarchy, with most of the townspeople beneath them. Ignorant country farmers like the Cunninghams come next, followed by trashy families like the Ewells. The black community is at the bottom of the heap. Lee emphasizes the illogic of forcing an entire group of people into the lowest social stratum simply because of their race. Under this system, a nasty, uneducated man like Bob Ewell can persecute a kind, responsible man like Tom Robinson without cause, simply because he is white and his victim is black. Lee also emphasizes the way people living in a stratified system eventually equate economic status with worth. For example, Scout's Aunt Alexandra refuses to let Scout associate with Walter Cunningham because he is poor. Scout and Jem are constantly baffled by the rules that govern society. With their bafflement, Lee points out that rules adults accept as absolute are actually relative and probably silly. Symbols in To Kill a Mockingbird. Mockingbirds. In the novel, mockingbirds symbolize innocence, so to kill a mockingbird is to destroy innocence. Jem, Tom Robinson, Dill, Boo Radley, and Mr. Raymond are mockingbirds, innocents who have been injured or destroyed through contact with evil. As Miss Maudie says, mockingbirds don't do one thing but sing their hearts out for us. That's why it's a sin to kill a mockingbird. After Tom Robinson is shot, Mr. Underwood compares his death to the senseless slaughter of songbirds. At the end of the novel, Scout thinks that hurting Boo Radley would be like shooting a mockingbird. Jem and Scout's last name, Finch, another type of small bird, emphasizes their innocence. Boo Radley. Boo Radley stands for the children's development from innocence to adulthood. At the beginning of the novel, Boo interests the children for his strangeness and creepiness. He gradually becomes increasingly real to them, leaving them presents and mending pants. By the end of the novel, he has become fully human to Scout, which suggests that she has become a sympathetic and understanding individual. Important quotations from To Kill a Mockingbird. Quote, Maycomb was an old town, but it was a tired old town when I first knew it. In rainy weather, the streets turned to red slop. Bony mules hitched to Hoover carts flicked flies in the sweltering shade of the live oaks on the square. Men's stiff collars wilted by 9 in the morning. Ladies bathed before noon, after their 3 o'clock naps, and by nightfall were like soft tea cakes with frostings of sweat and sweet talcum. There was no hurry, for there was nowhere to go, nothing to buy, and no money to buy it with, nothing to see outside the boundaries of Maycomb County. But it was a time of vague optimism for some of the people. Maycomb County had recently been told that it had nothing to fear but fear itself. Unquote. Location. Chapter 1. Speaker. Scout. Context. Scout describes Maycomb. Scout describes her hometown as a slow, old-fashioned, slightly backwards place. The tone of the passage tells us that Scout is telling her story as an adult looking back on her childhood experiences. The description of Maycomb provides clues about the story's chronological setting, making reference to mule-driven Hoover carts, dirt roads, and the widespread poverty of the town, implying that Maycomb is suffering during the Great Depression. Scout alludes to the words, "We have nothing to fear but fear itself," the most famous line from Franklin Delano Roosevelt's first inaugural speech, made after the 1932 presidential election. It is reasonable to infer that the action of the story opens in the summer of 1933, an assumption that subsequent historical clues support. The defeat of the National Recovery Act in the Supreme Court in 1935, for instance, is mentioned in Chapter 27 of the novel, when Scout is 8, about 2 years after the start of the novel. Quote, when they finally saw him, why, he hadn't done any of those things. Atticus, he was real nice. His hands were under my chin, pulling up the cover, tucking it around me. Most people are, Scout, when you finally see them. He turned out the light and went into Jem's room. He would be there all night, and he would be there when Jem waked up in the morning. Unquote. Location. Chapter 31. Speaker. Scout. Context. Scout talks to Atticus before falling asleep. These words conclude the novel. As Scout falls asleep, she tells Atticus about the events of The Gray Ghost, a book in which one of the characters is wrongly accused of committing a crime and considered dangerous. The wronged hero of the story suggests both Tom Robinson and Boo Radley. Atticus gently reminds Scout that most people are good, if misunderstood. This exchange is a reminder of the novel's themes of innocence, persecution, and empathy. The passage also emphasizes Atticus's strength and tenderness. He tucks Scout in, then goes to sit by Jem's bedside all night long. Through Atticus's strength, the tension and danger of the previous chapters are resolved, and the novel ends on a note of security and peace. Quote, "You never really understand a person until you consider things from his point of view, until you climb into his skin and walk around in it." Unquote. Location, Chapter 3. Speaker, Atticus. Context, Atticus explains his philosophy to Scout. Quote, "Remember, it's a sin to kill a mockingbird." That was the only time I ever heard Atticus say it was a sin to do something, and I asked Miss Maudie about it. "Your father's right," she said. "Mockingbirds don't do one thing but make music for us to enjoy, but sing their hearts out for us. That's why it's a sin to kill a mockingbird." Unquote. Location, Chapter 10. Speaker, Scout. Context, Scout relates her father's strong words about the evil of harming the innocent. Quote, "A boy trudged down the sidewalk dragging a fishing pole behind him. A man stood waiting with his hands on his hips. Summertime, and his children played in the front yard with their friend, enacting a strange little drama of their own invention. It was fall, and his children fought on the sidewalk in front of Mrs. DeBose. Fall, and his children trotted to and fro around the corner, the day's woes and triumphs on their faces. They stopped at an oak tree, delighted, puzzled, apprehensive. Winter, and his children shivered at the front gate, silhouetted against a blazing house. Winter, and a man walked into the street, dropped his glasses, and shot a dog. Summer, and he watched his children's heart break. Autumn again, and Boo's children needed him." Atticus was right. One time he said, "You never really know a man until you stand in his shoes and walk around in them. Just standing on the Radley porch was enough." Unquote. Location, Chapter 31. Speaker, Scout. Context, Scout imagines the world from Boo's perspective.
This has been an Audible Incorporated and SparkNotes production of the SparkNotes Study Guide for To Kill a Mockingbird by Harper Lee. Read by Ian August. Executive Producer Beth Anderson. Supervising Producer Arthur G. Insana. Directed by Mike Charzik. Chief Engineer Mike Charzik. Edited by Sam Yom. Music composed by Michael Whalen. Post-production and music supervisor, George James. Post-production music mix, Gary Fink. Copyright 2002 by SparkNotes LLC. Production copyright 2006 by Audible Incorporated. All rights reserved, including the right of reproduction in whole or in part in any form. This edition is published by arrangement with SparkNotes.
Audible Kids hopes you have enjoyed this audiobook. For more like it, check out kids.audible.com.